Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymeer Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymeer.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at the Graymeer Church of Christ.
If you want to take one of the Bibles that's in the rack in front of you, I believe that's page 1089. Sometimes it's hard to flip through those books, and Haggai is a very short one, so it's easy to go past it. But we want to spend some time in a short book with a powerful message tonight. There is a lot that's taking place, and just listening to the announcements, you can sense that we have a lot going on. And one thing that is important to remember is that we experience all of these things, and we go through all of these things as a church family. And we had an emotional morning this morning. We celebrated and rejoiced with Coleman Watkins putting Christ on in baptism, and what a powerful scene that was. So thankful for Doug, who's been studying with him, and just thankful for his enthusiasm and eager desire to do what's right. And isn't it exciting that we've had several in these last few weeks that have made that decision to become a Christian? Isn't that incredible? And so we're thankful for Coleman and for everyone who might be considering that. We want to invite you to think about what it means to become a Christian. Think about people you know who need to be here during our big campaign and need to be a part of this. We want to keep reaching out. And yes, we also had some other time together that was emotional this morning, as we had an announcement made that Chris will be transitioning into a different job. Rather than being the youth minister here, they're entering a new phase of life, and we're so thankful for Chris and Aaron and for Hunter and Keely and Kylie Ray and what that family means to us. I know I speak for all of you when I just say how thankful I am to have had the opportunity to work alongside Chris. He's done an excellent job here as our youth minister, and he and Aaron have been tremendous in doing all the little things, not just the big things we can see, but all those little things behind the scenes that are necessary to really impact the life of our teens. And so I know you're thankful for them, and I hope you'll take advantage of the opportunity to share that with them. I'm also thrilled that they'll be part of this church family. I think that says a lot about our congregation. I think it says a lot about us and about them and about the way we're working together as brothers and sisters, and we're all in this together. And so we're thankful that even over this time of transition that will take place in the next few months, that we're walking through this together. None of us are on our own, and we can encourage each other and we can lean on each other. And so let's be sure that we're doing that. And then just to hear the announcements about all the preparations that have been made and are being made for our big campaign that's coming up, especially the need for Vacation Bible School teachers. And the great thing about this opportunity is so much of the preparation has already been done. We've had a dedicated team that's done a great job getting us ready. And so even if you just say, I want to be a group leader that leads a group through the different areas, or I want to teach and plug in somewhere, there are all kinds of ways you can do that. The groundwork has been laid. The curriculum's been planned out. All it needs is you to plug into it. And so we want to be thinking about that, prayerful about that. We also put in our bulletin a reminder that we've got our summer series that's coming up in July. We'll have four Wednesday nights where we'll be able to listen to some guest speakers from the area, and we're very excited about that. So be sure that you're planning on those combined Bible classes on Wednesday nights in July. John Paul Gulledge, who was our youth intern last year, is now doing youth ministry at the West Corinth Church of Christ. He's going to be our first speaker, and so we're excited to have him. Especially excited because he loves to preach, and last summer in the schedule, between everything the youth group had going on, it just didn't get worked out where he could have an opportunity to speak. And so we're glad to have him coming back, and several others that are listed there. There's a lot that's going on. Let's be prayerful about it. Let's be thinking about ultimately how God can be glorified in all of this, and what can we do to lift his name up in this community. I don't know what comes to your mind when you think of the topic of priorities But I think all of us can remember times in our lives where it's been easy to misplace our priorities. We lose focus. We forget what's really important. One of my earliest memories of getting to go to a professional sports game was when I used to get to spend time with my family in Michigan, and we would go to see Detroit Tigers baseball games. And in one of those games, I can remember sitting in a section and seeing a foul ball that pops up, and it goes to the section that's not really far away from us. It's close enough for me to see what's happening. And it looks like it's going to land right on someone who has an arm full of concessions. He was obviously a father who was going to take his concessions to his family. He had popcorn, he had Cokes, he had the whole big deal. It was coming right at him. And so he does what you probably would do if you wanted to catch a fly ball at a professional baseball game. He drops everything and tries to catch it. He does not catch it. It bounces off the floor. He's on the upper level, and then it falls down to the lower level. And I can remember as a child thinking, oh, I can't believe he missed that ball. What a great opportunity he missed. And now as an adult, I think back and think, how much money did he spend on concessions that he just threw on the ground? I mean, that's $30 or $40 right there. But as we think about our priorities, sometimes, no matter how much he'd spent on that concession, he was willing to sort of throw that away just for the chance to catch that fly ball. There are times when our priorities can be misplaced, and then there are times when it's not quite as humorous. There are serious times when we get sidetracked and we start thinking about things that we should have done. And so if we can consider what that looks like, we're able to understand the central message that we see in the book of Haggai. It's a very short book of prophecy, and it's different than some of the other prophets that we've looked at. His message seems to be very condensed and very clear. He has a name that means, he has a name that means the joyous one or the festive one, and some have conjectured that that might mean he was born during a festival. We read about him in Ezra 5 and Ezra 6 both show that he's a prophet of God who had a role in rebuilding the temple. In fact, if we read through, Ezra tells us that when the foundations were laid, opponents of the work were frustrating it by reporting back to King Cyrus that these people were rebels. And there were 16 years where work on the temple was not taking place. Now, we know that as we've looked at all of these prophets, they've all sort of been on different places in the timeline after God's people had been overtaken. They've been overtaken into Babylonian captivity, and then you have the Medo-Persians that come into power, and they rule differently. And instead of separating the people from their land, they allowed them to go back. And so that's what's happening here, as they're able to go back and try to pick up the pieces of this city that had once been their headquarters, that had once been the place that drew all of them together in Jerusalem. And so different parts of the historical books show us different areas that were being built up. So Ezra gives us a hint as to what's happening as they start to rebuild the temple. But there are some opponents in the area that are frustrating them. And so there are years that go by without the temple being built. And so when Haggai shows up as a prophet of God, he's got a very important message. It's almost a laser focus on rebuilding the temple. Nehemiah in the Old Testament seems to be associated with building the wall around the city and fortifying the city. That seems to be his main purpose. If Nehemiah is focused on a wall, then we have Haggai who's focused on the temple, rebuilding the temple for God's people. It's probably hard for us to fully appreciate the importance that they would have placed on the temple of God. That was seen as the place where God interacted with human beings, where God interacted with His people. And so why would that be important to us today? We don't live under the same covenant they do. We serve the same God, but we're not commanded to think about temple worship and offerings at the temple. So why is that important? I think that imagery of the temple is very powerful because it shows up several places. One of those places is in 1 Corinthians chapter 3. Where Paul's writing to the church at Corinth, and he says in verse 10, according to the grace of God given to me, like a skilled master builder, I laid a foundation, and someone else is building upon it. Let each one take care how he builds upon it, for no one can lay a foundation other than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Do you not know that you are God's temple, and that God's Spirit dwells in you? If anyone destroys God's temple, God will destroy him, for God's temple is holy, and you are that temple. Now, there are passages, and especially later on in 1 Corinthians, we see Paul specifically say that individually Christians are temples of the Holy Spirit. But that's not what he's saying here. Here he's saying you, plural, you, the church, are the place where God dwells. God's Spirit is in his church, in his people. Those who have put on Christ, those who are unified together in God's family, he's saying, you are a temple. We're not thinking about a physical place anymore. Now we're thinking about the church. And so there are many principles about how the temple was treated when we read through the Old Testament, even in the Gospels, as they're living under that law of Moses and worshiping at the temple, that are powerful for us to help us understand the church. And so I want our eyes to be open to some of those parallels that are here. But there are a couple of enemies that were the enemies of the rebuilding of the temple in Haggai's time. And I have a feeling those enemies surface in our lives today. The first that we're introduced to at the very beginning of Haggai, in chapter 1, beginning in verse 3, is the enemy of selfishness. Then the word of the Lord came by the hand of Haggai the prophet. Is it a time for you yourselves to dwell in your paneled houses while this house lies in ruins? Now therefore, thus says the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. You have sown much and harvested little. You eat, but you never have enough. You drink, but you never have your fill. You clothe yourselves, but no one is warm. And he who earns wages does so to put them into a bag with holes. Why would Haggai begin this way? Why would God send this message to him? You see, when the people came back to Jerusalem, it was not quite a victorious homecoming, because Jerusalem was just a shadow of what they had left. It didn't raise up to the level of their expectation, and so they have to go back and they have to get to work. And no longer are they the people of King Solomon, who had so much wealth and wisdom. Now they're people who'd been defeated, and they have to rebuild. And apparently they had gotten distracted with making sure that their homes were okay, their paneled houses that are described here, that they'd forgotten about the house of the Lord, about the temple that they had put so much emphasis on. That was being neglected while they were being taken care of. And did you notice the imagery that's seen here? That no matter how much they tried to take care of themselves, when they were ignoring what was needed spiritually, it was never enough. You eat, but you never have enough. You're never full. You drink, but you never have your fill. You earn wages, but it's like the bag you put it in has holes in it. It's never quite enough. And so you get this layered description that says you're never going to have enough until there's a focus on what truly matters. They've been distracted with what they were doing and had forgotten to take care of the temple of the Lord. It seems like the biggest enemy they face in all this was not outward. There were some outward enemies. There were some opponents that had given them a hard time, that had tried to report back that they weren't acting the way that they should. And so they had some of those to deal with. But it seems here that Haggai is pointing specifically to indifference, specifically to this sort of malaise that had grown up around them, that they were just sort of doing what they had been used to doing, and they just weren't taking care of what needed to be done. And we know what that's like, because we know what it's like to walk into a house right after we've moved in and to have a list of things that we need to take care of. You know, this window, I've got to do something to fix this. I've got to take care of this door. Whatever that is, we have a list in our mind. And you know what happens? The longer we live there, we kind of get used to it. So we say, you know, I'm kind of used to this sink not working. I'll just use another sink. I don't think I really have to spend much time in this. And we get used to it, and then we forget about it. And the importance that it once had in our mind, now it doesn't have that same level of importance. And it probably was hard at first not to think about the temple and all that it needed, but it might have gotten easier as different things in your everyday schedule would have crowded that out. And so living at the time of Haggai, it's almost like he's taking them by the shoulders and he's pointing them to where they needed to be focused. And he said, you're missing this. You've been so distracted with selfishness, you're not going to find satisfaction until you put God first. In the language of Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, he's encouraging them to seek first the kingdom of God. And all these other things that had consumed their thinking would be added to them. It's a matter of priorities. And priorities can be pretty serious. Years ago, Clifton Fadiman wrote a book, a collection of anecdotes, and one of those was about a Russian-born novelist named Vladimir Nabokov. He had popular success with his novels. And one summer in the 1940s, he and his family were staying in Alta, Utah. And he took the opportunity to do something he enjoyed doing. He wanted to enlarge his collection of butterflies and moths. And so he went out to try to collect some butterflies. One evening he returned from that day's excursion saying he was really after one near Bear Gulch. And he heard someone groaning nearby. And his friend asked him, well, who was it? What was wrong? Did you stop and see? And he said, no, I had to get the butterfly. And so he tracked down that butterfly and brought it home. The next day, there was the body of an aged prospector that was found there in the gulch. And the statement is made as Fadiman finishes the story. While people around us are dying, how often we chase butterflies. I think that's powerful. It's easy to be distracted when there are important things that need to be done. And this sort of insidious temptation that just gets so focused on myself that I don't think about anyone else is not relegated to just one period of history. It's not just for God's people in the book of Haggai. It's for all of us. When there are things that need to be done, it's so easy to be distracted, to be focused on things that don't matter as much. And it might be tempting for me to locate the problem somewhere else and outside of myself. So to say, well, you know, I would do this, but I have this, this, and this, and I'm really good at finding other reasons why I'm not doing what I should. I don't know if you are. I've gotten to be pretty good at that. I can rationalize a lot of things. And so it's a matter of catching ourselves and saying, where is the real problem? Could it be that there's a little bit of an indifference, a little bit of apathy that I've allowed to dominate my life? And so instead of being purposeful and serving God, I'm just kind of going through my routine daily motions and just doing what I usually do and doing just enough where I don't feel all of that guilty, but maybe not fulfilling my potential. I think that's challenging. Haggai would have been very challenging for these people to hear. And so I have to ask myself, what can I do to get around this kind of indifference? And if you're thinking, as we think about this, what could I possibly do to break out of that? Let me just say, I'm glad you asked. Because we do have a campaign that we've been praying about and thinking about. And no one person here can do everything that's going to happen in the next few weeks. No one of us can be everywhere and be involved in everything, in the Vacation Bible School and the service projects and the door knocking. There's going to be so much happening. But all of us could do something. And it may be that the prospect of knocking at someone's door and asking them if they're interested in coming to VBS or interested in a Bible study, it may be that that is a very scary thing. It might not be pleasant. But what would happen if you tried it? What would happen if you just tried it for one day, if you went out and had that experience? You know, it may even be that with your schedule that's taking place, it may be a tremendous sacrifice just to do what's needed to get here in time at night every evening. I know our schedules are packed. They're busy, especially during the summer. We have a lot going on. But what would happen if you were here every single night? You know, we're going to have a lot of volunteers that will be working here in Vacation Bible School. That means we'll need a lot of people who are willing to be in the auditorium for our adults that are visiting with us. You know, we don't want to have our guests come into an empty auditorium. We want to be here. We want to be here with them and be willing to do things that are out of our comfort zone. To be willing to make room for them to sit with us. Or to greet them and talk to them even if they're sitting in our usual seat. To be willing to say, I'm glad that you're here. And it would be so much easier for us to only talk with our friends or the people we're used to seeing. But what if we made a specific effort to try to talk to every person who walked in this auditorium and was visiting? What if we did that? How would that be different? What's one thing we can do to make sure that we're breaking out of our usual routine and a usual habit, and that we're focusing on what really matters? None of us can do everything, but every single one of us can do something. And so I want to encourage you tonight, be thinking about what your something will be. And depending on circumstances, it could be different for every one of us. And God doesn't expect any more of us than we can reasonably give. He only expects what we have, but what do we have that we could give? I hope that's something we're thinking about, because it's easy for that to creep in. But then a second enemy shows up that Haggai has to deal with. And we find this in the second chapter of Haggai. And that is the enemy of nostalgia. He says, "Who is left among you who saw this house in its former glory? How do you see it now? Is it not as nothing in your eyes? Yet now be strong, O Zerubbabel, declares the Lord. Be strong, O Joshua, son of Jehozadak, the high priest. Be strong, all you people of the land, declares the Lord. Work, for I am with you, declares the Lord of hosts. According to the covenant I made with you when you came out of Egypt, my spirit remains in your midst. Fear not." You see, one of the challenges they had came when they were rebuilding the temple. If you flip through the pages of the Old Testament, you find in 1 Kings how Solomon had a tremendous army of workers. You can do that when you're the king and you can force people into labor. You can have tens of thousands. He had 30,000 men in forced labor where they were divided into groups. And one group would spend a month in Lebanon getting all the materials and then 2 months back home. And they would rotate around. And the temple, when it was completed, would have been magnificent. And even though over 60 years would have passed since the temple had been destroyed, there seemed to have been still people among Israel that remembered the temple, that remembered how it used to look. And so can you imagine what it would be like with what meager tools they would have had and what meager supplies they would have had to be rebuilding the temple, even though its dimensions would have been roughly the same? Can't you just hear people saying, "I wish you could have seen it when Solomon built it. Boy, I wish you could have seen Solomon's temple. This is okay, I guess. But boy, when I was a child, I heard stories about Solomon's temple. Those were the stories that my parents told me, even when we were in exile, of what the temple looked like before they invaded. It was incredible. You wouldn't believe how wealthy Solomon was. You wouldn't believe how wonderful things were." And God says, it's as if this is nothing in your eyes. And I love the question that he asks them. As he says, "Is it as nothing as your eyes? Be strong." And he says, "Be strong," several times. And then he says, "Work, for I am with you." In other words, he's telling them, don't get caught up in looking at the way things used to be. I'm with you now. Don't you remember when I took you out of Egypt? I am still with you. My spirit is with you. That has always been what mattered. That was always what mattered about the temple. Whether it was the tabernacle or the temple, what mattered about it is that God was with them. It didn't matter the materials that Solomon used. It didn't matter how incredible it looked. In fact, by the time we get to the New Testament, the apostles are looking at this temple that Herod has had rebuilt, and there are all these beautiful elements. It seems like they were adding a new element every year or so. You had this incredible ornate finishes over everything and all the additions to the temple, and the apostles were marveling at it. And that's when Jesus says, there's not going to be one stone of this left on another. It's so easy for us to focus on the outward and to say, you know, it used to be like this. And God is saying, I am here with you now. Now, there's a phrase that gets used in preaching a lot, where you stop preaching and go to meddling. And I just want to tell you that this has weighed on me for the last few weeks as I've thought about this passage. And so I'm going to start right here with stepping on my toes. And if we come to this passage and if we ask some tough questions, we may have all our toes stepped on by the time we're done. It is easy for us to fall into the trap of looking back and thinking back about the past and letting that blind us to the potential in the future. We need to know our history. We need to know what God has done for us. How many times did God tell the Israelites they needed to remember what He had done for them? That's important. So knowing our history and celebrating God's blessing is vital. But falling into a nostalgic mindset can be incredibly detrimental. And I think that that's possible even for churches today. In fact, if you look at some of the developments that church growth researchers have found, almost all of them will have some sort of model of church growth where it starts with a dream and a vision, and it starts with people who are excited about achieving that vision, and there's production and things are going well, and then it'll get to a plateau, and there's always a danger. Once you're at a plateau, you've either got to renew your dream and renew your vision and keep going, or if you fall into that trap of nostalgia, thinking, remember when it used to be like this, remember when it used to be like that, that's almost always a sign of heading downward instead of upward. And so it's important for us to remember. I'm incredibly thankful that we celebrated, and I thought, just an outstanding day of homecoming not too long ago. I love the fact that we could celebrate what God has done. I love that timeline that had everybody's name on it and when they came. It was an education for me just to look at the pictures that were put in that slideshow and to learn some things about some of you, things I didn't even know you had been involved with and many of you had begun. We need to know that heritage. But can I tell you something? It would be tempting. It would be easy to allow that celebration of what God has done to morph into nostalgia that says, you know, I remember when things were like this. And I remember when things happened this way. And don't you miss those days? And to sort of get so caught up in the way things used to be, we forget that God is here right now. I love the fact that as we celebrated that history, that as John Vaughn was sharing that with us in class, he made a statement at the end of that class I thought was powerful and challenging for us, where he said that the brightest days of Graymere are ahead of us. I think that's a challenge for us to remember. Do you believe that? Do you believe there are things that we might not even be able to imagine right now that God can do through His people here? Do you believe that? Do you believe that since we have the same God working with us who took those families who began this congregation 60 years ago and blessed them and blessed the work of this congregation and has extended it out in so many areas, do you believe that He is still here and still with us? And if so, then we can take this advice from Haggai. It's more than advice, really. It's a command. To remember that when God is working, that's what it is about. It's what it has always been about. It has always been about the God that we serve. And that exists beyond anything physical that might be impressive to us. It wasn't about the temple exterior. It was about the interior of their hearts, of the people who were serving God. When God is with us, who can be against us? And so the question we have, if we're asking ourselves, well, what is our future? What would the future of this congregation be? Well, that depends. How powerful do we believe our God is? I believe we serve a powerful God. Because of that, I believe there's an incredibly bright future. Not because we're so great or we're so talented or we have so much, but because God is at work. And God is working in us and through us. And isn't it a blessing that we get to participate? That He allows us to be part of His family. And so I want to challenge us. I want to challenge us to dream, to think about one thing you can do, like we've already talked about, but think about one dream you can have for the future of this congregation. Where could we be? What could we do for the Lord? Not a selfish, self-centered dream, but a dream that's focused on doing God's work and helping the kingdom to grow. What could we do if we focus on looking forward? We don't have to rely on ourselves. As Paul told the church at Corinth, God gives the increase. I don't know everything that's going to happen as a result of our campaign this month. But I do know this, that if I'm serving God, then He is going to bless His servants. Those blessings might not come in the way I might imagine them. Hopefully we'll have several people that we come in contact with that decide to be Christians. We might not have as many as we'd like. We always want one more or two more or 10 more. But I know that if we're serving God and if we're dedicated to Him, He will be with us. He'll give the increase. That part's up to God. What's up to us is working for Him. Just dream for a moment. Dream of what could be. Let's start praying about that. Let's remember that the God who has always blessed His people is still here and still working through His people today. There are a couple of enemies that show up in Haggai that aren't limited to history, aren't limited to geography, but they're everywhere. They can creep into our own thinking. And it's going to take discipline, and it's going to take a purposeful spirit to combat those and to keep those from taking us in a direction that we shouldn't go. And yet, when we're armed with God's Word, we'll be reminded. Maybe sometimes we need to be taken by the shoulders, as Haggai was doing to the people here, and saying, look at this. Here's what's important. Here's the real priority. But if we can keep that as our number one priority, if we can seek first His kingdom and what truly matters, and if we allow God to be the focus not only of our work and what we do, but the focus of our lives, we know that if we seek Him first, that all these things will be added to you, and that we'll be on the side of the one who's more powerful than any enemy we can ever face. What are we building? What are we focused on? Where are our priorities? All of us have some challenges tonight to take with us from a very short book in the Old Testament. But I also want you to know that if tonight you have decided you want to become part of the church, part of God's building, a part of His people, you can do that. We spent time this morning thinking about the simple but powerful message of the gospel. That when we come to believe not only that God created all, but that He sent His Son to die for us, when we submit our lives to Him and put Christ on in baptism, we're part of that church. We're part of that church through whom God has chosen to reach the world. And we can work for Him. If you are a part of that church and you need encouragement, you just need us to help you, to put our arms around you, to pray for you. If there's any way that we can be of assistance to you, please let us know as we stand and as we worship.
When I survey the one